When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 31. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on character, tying it all together.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So we have been looking at the short stories of C.L. Clarke. We looked at three of them, and we've been using them to examine character. This is the episode where we take the kind of higher view and just talk about the techniques that we've been looking at and how you can apply them to your own work. So kind of think of this as a summary recap. What are some of the techniques that you are kind of most excited about as they are embodied in these stories?
The first... And it's probably the most concrete for me because I actually have an example for it, is the blending of tools about agency and choice and barriers versus stakes. Because when you talk about a character choosing a thing, the stakes have to matter not just to the character, but to the reader. At the end of the Lighthouse story, Sego has chosen to return to the lighthouse with medication for the lighthouse keeper, for Audie. And this has two sets of attached stakes. One is, yay, ships won't crash. And the other is, oh, Audie won't be lonely. And I'm making light of both of them, but only one of them resonates with me. And that is that Audie won't be lonely. It's the personal stake that resonates for me. And the lesson, the piece of tape that I would use to label the tool for myself, is that personal stakes will engage the reader, impersonal stakes might be fun for world building, might be cool for scope of story, but if you want to engage the reader, letting characters make choices that have personal stakes that's the tool.
It is about the specificity, I think, and the specificity and tying it to individuals. As humans, we tend to respond to stories about people. So if you read about there's a war that's going on in another country, that's very sad. But when you see the photo of the child who has been orphaned, that makes it much more immediate because you can imagine that child. And that's a specific child who has lost specific parents. And you can also, I think, tie it to an experience that you have yourself. So anytime you can kind of create space for the reader to insert themselves by having those common experiences, those are times when that specificity of the author choice is going to make the character seem richer and more alive.
Well, this is the thing that Clark does so well. And I mentioned this a few times on past episodes. But the way that they write embodied characters, the way they use sensory detail, physicality, because those things are very relatable. I don't need to have been a warrior going off to war to understand the pleasure of smelling rosemary in a kitchen, of tasting a beautifully cooked potato, to have exercised to the point that I'm having trouble walking down the stairs, right? Those are all things that we can experience in our own lives. And those sensory details carry us into these fantastical situations. And the way they use external information to give deep, deep interiority into the character is really fascinating for me because we have very little access to what these characters are thinking and feeling necessarily, but a lot about what they are doing.
What you said about embodiment also made me realize that all three stories, I believe, have a sex scene. They're very embodied and there's sex happening, which is a very embodied act. And yet it feels so dreamlike in its own way in each of the stories.
Yeah.
And it feels in some ways more, to me, like personal, and it resonates more than a really explicit scene might. Mm-hmm. Because the way in which each of these characters view their bodies comes through in the way they view using their body in that way. So you have in You Perfect Broken Thing, it's about like the stretching and the concentric and the muscles, because this is somebody who is actually going off and using their muscles. For the cook, I think it's a lot more, there's like food involved because it's about feeding someone. Mm-hmm. And so each of these things are about the way, in The Lightkeeper, it's about the light in some ways
and
the fire and the burning. And I love the way that it's not just embodied, but it's embodied in different ways. And in seeing the same act take place in three different stories really shows you how different those characters are and how embodiment can be different from one story to the next.
The other thing is that I just want to point out is that C.L. Clark is using a tool that we've talked about in our first series, which is voice. Mm-hmm. And the specific language choices are underscoring the choices that the characters are making, not just the, now we're going to be talking about food, but in You Perfect Broken Thing, that wonderful section when the character is actually running the race. And we're just like, punctuation, what is that even? Mm-hmm. Like, we are breathless. It is nonstop. It is completely in the moment. And that, I love that. And it, again, it's one of those things where I'm like, am I being too, is there some place where I should just pull all the punctuation out? It was something that I got very excited about.
You know, I think when we talk about muscular prose, people have this idea of like Hemingway, 6-word sentences, like very short sentences that are very to the point and very grounded and literal. And I just want to point out the way in which C.L. Clark has incredibly muscular prose, like very forceful, very clear, very sensory oriented, but still incredible poetics and incredible imagery and richness of language and word choice. These stories are incredibly beautiful on an imagery and sense level. And the fact that those things don't have to be in tension with each other. And I think sometimes people talk about it as if they are.
So just to remind you of some of the tools that we've been talking about, since we just drifted over into language because we get very excited about it. Some of the tools we've been talking about are ability, role, relationship, and status. And the thing that this is a tool that I find so much fun and that they use in all of the stories to shift kind of what the character's focus is, what their motivation is, by shifting which aspect of self is most important to them, which one is highlighted on the page at any given moment. And that's something that you can do. Like, look at your work in progress. This isn't even homework. This is just like a good practice. Look at your work in progress. If you're stuck in your scene, take a look at it and just jot down, like, what is challenging my character's ability right now? What is challenging the tasks that they have to do? What responsibilities are they feeling like right now? How can that break for them? Which loyalties are being tugged on in this scene? Like, how is their status affected? Just by the way, a quick reminder for you, status involves, a lot of different things. If you have imposter syndrome, that's a status issue. Mm-hmm. That's where your internal status does not match the external status, mm-hmm. where your idea of what you can do is very different from what other people think you can do.
And if you turn that upside down, you, instead of imposter syndrome, you have Dunning-Kruger effect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, those are things that you can play with in your own fiction, whether you're writing short form or long form. This is a tool that works at any length that you're playing in.
Yeah, I also liked in looking at all these, because a lot of these are tools that are like newer to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm always like trying to figure out how they work and like get inside of them. And I think thinking about that, you can, it's like twisting the facet like of a diamond and looking at different facets, but also that you can create. When we were talking about barriers, I was saying you can create different barriers on all of those axes. You can create different stakes on mm-hmm. all those axes. You can have them like fight each other. You can have a story where like it's my ability against my status mm-hmm. and I've got to pick one or the other. And that's the choice that I'm making. And that's, you know, the agency that I have in the story. So I think when all of these tools, no tool is static. You know, it's like, you know, you can take a tool and use it to do a lot of different things. And so I've had a lot of fun thinking about how can we use these tools in very different ways and think about them within our own stories?
Yeah. You actually just made me go, oh, yeah, actually, one of the things that's happening in The Lighthouse is that we have the role of I am a pirate and the relationship of Audie, and those are in direct mm-hmm. conflict with each other. Yeah. Ooh, smart. Well, let's take a moment. We're going to pause, and then we come back. We're going to talk about some more of the tools and how you can apply them to your own fiction.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
I've talked before in our Thing of the Week about Rude Tales of Magic, but it's one of my very favorite podcasts. It's nominally a D&D actual play show, but the cast takes D&D more as an inspiration and runs from there and tells hilarious improvised stories that still find a way to have deep character work and heartfelt storytelling. I'm talking about it again because they just started a new season last fall, so it's a great time to jump in and discover how delightful A Rude Tale can be.
Welcome back.
Okay. We're back now. And one of the things I got so excited about, I didn't even know how to express it in words, was the dream, because I think yeah. this is the first time that they've been hearing about it. You know, my bad, I'd forgotten about it, and having it come back was really exciting for me and really thinking about how that all works. And so that was a tool that I think, I know we were just in our last episode, but what is it again?
Denial, resistance, exploration, acceptance, and manifestation. I learned about this from Elizabeth Boyle, who was describing romances. And so the thing that I have been enjoying about this series is that previously when I have talked about it, I've had to use really, you know, like very loose examples of it. But I think seeing it applied to a story makes it much more concrete. I got super excited when I was in Elizabeth's class and learned about it. So denial, resistance, exploration, acceptance, and manifestation.
Yeah, I love this framework because, you know, I can see how it came from romance, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, when we talked about it last episode, we were applying it to a romance arc, but I can see this applying to so many character mm-hmm. arcs, right? Because accepting your role in the world, accepting your limitations, accepting the various aspects of the other framework we're talking about in terms of accepting what your status is, what your ability is, and then, you know, getting to that point of manifestation, all of those things are stages of any character arc along any of the axes we've talked about before, right? So again, we're not talking about these tools in isolation. They are all mix and match, and you pull from different aspects and apply them to other aspects. And that's how you get a rich, nuanced character like the ones that we're meeting in these stories.
And you'll see that again also in Your Perfect Broken Thing. Like, yeah, I can totally do this race. I'm going to be mm-hmm. tired and exhausted, but I will do it. And then, oh, actually, no, maybe I can't. Maybe I am, in fact, dying. Okay, what happens if I run this race for someone else entirely? Yes, that is what I am doing. I am going to win this race for someone else. Mm-hmm. And then the manifestation of you take the shot.
And then in The Cook, it's the same thing. Those stages are externalized into her going off to war and coming back more and more traumatized, more and more injured, as she's forced to accept the conditions of her life until she can get to a place of manifestation.
At risk of briefly confusing and conflating the tools, it's easy to look at Dream and to see symmetries between that and the very popularized stages of grief. Mm-hmm. What I love about Dream is that we don't end with acceptance. We end with manifestation, mm-hmm. because this isn't for how to recover from grieving. This is for a writer who wants to make that plot turn or that character turn or whatever towards the end of the story, and then end the story with something that is hopefully satisfying.
Yeah.
Acceptance in and of itself can be satisfying, but a manifestation of it that meets, you know, surprising yet inevitable, or that mirrors, you know, creates a bookend from something at the beginning of the story. That's where I start blending these tools together.
Mm-hmm. I should say that Elizabeth actually got this from an anger management class. She tells this when she's teaching the class, that she was forced to go to an anger management class while she was working for Microsoft. And she's like, well, this is ridiculous. I don't need to be here. So full on denial. And then as soon as the teacher put that up on the board, she's like, I suddenly became the best student, sat in the front, because she was like, that is a romance arc right there.
Well, and what's great about the manifestation point, that as you were talking about, Howard, is it's a framework to get a character to make a choice.
Yes.
Because manifestation is about the claiming one's agency, claiming one's choices. And so that is a character arc. An arc has to end with a character choosing something, that choosing maybe accepting their fate in some way, in which case acceptance and manifestation are very close together. But, you know, it's getting a character to make a choice is the thing that you're really trying to do to get us to understand and empathize with a character's journey.
In You Perfect Broken Thing, the acceptance is, you know, I will choose to you know, give my prize to others so that mm-hmm. they can live. The manifestation is, for me anyway, the surprising yet inevitable of somebody else did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Other people are now looking at this and are sharing the gift. The character already made their choice. They are now helpless to further influence the story, but other people begin choosing things that that carry that choice even further, that make it manifest as a satisfying ending.
You made me think of a thing that I'm going to talk about, because one of the things that people ask me about when I teach this elsewhere is how it applies to series. And we've been saying all along that you can take all of the tools that we've been talking about and you can use them anywhere. So we've been talking about a tool in short story, but Dream will work for a novel length, but it'll also work for series. Mm-hmm. Basically, whatever manifestation point your character winds up at the end kind of becomes the problem for them for the next thing. Or another way to look at it is they think they've solved the problem, but it only lasts for a moment. And the best example that I can give this for you is extremely rude. So denial. I'm not a writer. resistance. Well, okay, so I've written some things, but I'm really not a writer. Exploration. Okay, maybe I'll try finishing something. Acceptance. Oh, I finished it. I finished. I think I am a writer. Manifestation. I'm going to show it to somebody. But I'm not really a writer because I haven't submitted anything yet. Well, okay, so maybe I'll submit it to a market, but I'm going to get rejected immediately. Okay, fine. So I've submitted it to a market, and then acceptance. I got rejected, but I'm going to submit it again because, you know, getting a rejection means I'm a writer. Manifestation. I send it out again, but I'm still not a writer. And this is a thing where every time you think I have solved this thing, you haven't, because what you're shifting here with this dream are those things we've been talking about before, this ability, role, relationship, and status. You level up, but then there are new monsters in front of you.
Each of these is a trifecta.
And so
your imposter syndrome leveled up with you.
Yes, exactly. And so you can do that over a series that every time they level up, that core problem in them, that hole in them is still there.
And something that's really relatable about that is that this is, like you're saying, this is what humans do. We tend to like go through something. It's like extending a long rubber band. And then the minute you get to manifestation, you kind of forget like all the difficulties that happen. You snap the rubber band back and you're like, oh, well, I manifested it. So it couldn't have been that hard to do. All that stuff I did was obviously meaningless. Mm-hmm. And like now I'll never be able to stretch this next rubber band. And so when characters are doing that, there's something that even if they're going through something we'll never experience in our own lifetimes, we understand it a little bit and it feels very human and it keeps people wanting to be invested in your character and in the story.
Yeah.
Giving your readers those micro arcs are the things that are so satisfying that ultimately as you stack those arcs on arcs on arcs, ends up feeling like a fully realized three-dimensional character, as we call it.
Yeah, and you can also, I'm glad you said the word micro arcs, because you can also use dream within a single paragraph.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's a lovely tool. I also, I'm not going to pull them out in the text. I'm going to let you all do that. But there are multiple examples in all of these stories where there are the dream arc happening within a single paragraph. Things where the different abilities, the different aspects of self are tugging on each other. These stories are just fun. I really enjoyed this.
They're wonderful stories. And, you know, I found them also meaningful in the way that the characters always come back to community and connection over everything else, right? As we were talking about last time, seeing that resistance to the call to adventure and sort of that disruption of traditional fantasy narratives. And you can get there by rooting it in character. When you root it so deeply in a person's perspective and wants and needs, then when they're making those choices that run counter to our expectations of how a fantasy story is supposed to go, it feels organic and exciting. Nothing is more thrilling than in the Lighthouse story, her choosing to come back to the lighthouse, her choosing not to be living the life of adventure. It is, and then she has to do this difficult task. Mm-hmm. She has to prove herself by climbing the wall and getting the herbs and things like that. It really rewards us for that journey that we're going on with her, even though it's a non-traditional one.
One of the things that I learned from a class on writing middle grades was that that you should pick the protagonist who was least suited to solve the problem. And that was fascinating to me because previously I had heard that you should pick the protagonist who, you know, only they can solve the problem. But thinking about who is least suited, it causes the character to have to make different choices, that constraint of agency that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who is least suited to win a race? Someone who is dying of a disease. Mm. You know, who is least suited to stay in a lighthouse? An adventurer who is, you know, who chooses to go from place to place. And realizing that by introducing these characters, and these people who are least suited to this thing, who's least suited to stay in a kitchen is, you know, barbarian warrior. But those
hygiene, come on.
that kind of shift of discovering that something is more important to them, to me, is significantly more interesting than the stories where we start with a character who's deeply flawed and so flawed that they are an asshole that I don't want to spend any time with on the page. And that's something that I love about these is that these are complicated characters, but it's about them learning what they value.
And there's more to it than just us connecting with the story. There's also the fact that you as a human person, us as human people, we were not cut out perfectly to be the best possible person to solve the problems that will face us. Mm-hmm. Life does not follow that sort of narrative. And so these kinds of stories where a character makes choices, where they choose between different sets of stakes, where they exercise their agency in ways that hadn't occurred to them earlier in order to bring about positive change. I would like us all to be able to do that kind of thing. And this, there might be a little bit of envy speaking here. I want to be able to write the kind of story that makes other people feel that way.
Yeah.
I want to be able to write things that make you feel like you can change in amazing ways.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I have homework that's going to feed into that. So for your homework, I want you to write a character study. This does not have to be a full story, but as you've seen with the cook, it can be. Write a character study in which two characters meet twice. Something momentous has happened in between the meetings. It is off stage, and I want you to imply it by the way those characters have changed using all the tools that we've been talking about.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now, go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.